So, hello everyone. So I'm really excited to be on this panel. The Marcha Center is very new. Its founding convention occurred in like around summer 2017, and kind of part of being so new means that it's a little deceiving to have suggested in this time that either of us would be providing the official Marcha Center perspective. I think you'll see that there are some.
Could you please move the microphone closer to you?
Yeah, I can, absolutely.
Thank you.
Okay. Is that better? Awesome. So, yeah, like I was saying, I think it's a little deceiving for me to suggest that either one of us is going to be providing the official Marcha Center perspective. I think you'll see that Kate and I have some differences in opinion about how things are, how we might describe things, or how we might envision strategy moving forward, but I think that's part of what we're trying to do here. Our organization, the Marcha Center, is diffused both like kind of structurally and ideologically in this regard. And kind of most of my remarks will be based on my experience in Philly Socialist. So when I say we or our, you can assume that I'm talking about Philly Socialist as a collective rather than the Marcha Center. So I've been a member of Philly Socialist for just 3 years, and somehow I've spent the last two of those years on the Central Committee and on the editorial board of our quarterly journal, the Philadelphia Partisan. And it's crazy to think about, but when I joined, but at the time I was pretty much ready to exit the left. And I'm sure many of you have felt this way at some point in the last several years, maybe you feel this way right now. This feeling that we are in a historic moment, but the left is just not keeping up. Before I moved to Philly 3 years ago, I had like no idea who we were. I had no idea what Philly Socialist was. But I really haven't looked back since, because in this small organization that only exists in one city, I found a group of people pursuing a strategy that I had never seen or heard of. And I spent months kind of agonizing because there's really nothing written down about what on earth we were doing or how we were supposed to do it. But over those over the first few months and over these last few years, I've really gotten to see our strategy in action. And I think we are finally in a position in Philly Socialists, after a series of major successes, to develop a more clear and specifically public theory of our strategy. Like I said, the Marcha Center is a diffuse body, but it would be kind of like just untrue to suggest that we are not united along some common strategic ground. And I believe in Philly Socialists, we can start to see the outlines of potentially the common Marcha Center strategy. So this is one of probably our biggest public attempts in Philly Socialists to explain ourselves and what on earth we are doing in Philadelphia. And I really look forward to, as Todd said, a good Q&A and conversations about the conference. So let's dive in. In Philly Socialists, our main strategic priorities, I think you can kind of schematically say, are one, to rebuild a direct work connection with the working class, and two, to reestablish the legitimacy of socialist politics within our communities. These are the two most immediate priorities to building a politically independent working class base. And by politically independent, we're referring to the degree to which the class can act for itself and by itself. We believe that it's up to us as revolutionaries to build this base. However, I want to make it clear that in our view, base building is not an inherently revolutionary strategy, unless phone banking and door knocking are somehow inherently revolutionary. Our basic understanding of base building comes from Jane McAleevy's No Shortcuts and Raising Expectations. And based on these texts, I would argue that base building must at least fulfill four criteria. One, the organization wants to constantly grow its base. So for example, an Antifa group would likely prefer smaller numbers for security reasons, and small, tight-knit affinity groups have an important role to play in fighting the far right, but it's not base building. Two, the base does not rely on a self-selecting membership. For example, if my recruitment strategy centers around the most advanced sections of my constituency, the kind of people who are already going to every protest in town, then we are building what McAleevy would call a mobilizing network, and what others in the Marcha Center might label as an activist network. We need to be extending our base into working class communities where people may not be involved directly in any political organizing. Three, organizations need to center the organic leaders' relationships to recruit and mobilize. Organizing to be identifying and developing these organic leaders, people with pre-existing relationships in the constituencies you are organizing. Base building organizations cannot rely on the organizer's ability and hard work to turn out membership. For example, for our community garden, we regularly ask community members to lead door knocking. In our experience, door knocking is significantly more effective when you have someone who can speak to the specifics of the area. Four, organic leaders must hold decision-making power. Not, for example, having your projects being led by socialist insiders who keep decision-making away from non-socialist participants. This is a pretty schematized model, but I think this roughly outlines what we think of as the basics of base building. While it is not inherently revolutionary, this model is focused on establishing what we in Philly Socialists refer to as deep trust-based relationships. People arrive at socialism when a crisis pushes them to seek alternatives, and the groundwork is there so socialists can convincingly present one such alternative. This groundwork is a lattice of deep trust-based relationships. Whether it is calling a strike or simply delivering a list of demands to your landlord, people need to have faith in us, our organizations, and our politics before they can be compelled to act, let alone become socialists. But I'm not asking socialists to parachute into communities, knock down doors, and make hundreds of thousands of new friends. Facebook relies on organic leaders who already have their foot in the door. Sometimes it's the person everyone in the neighborhood already knows and respects. More typically, it's someone who is ready to act, has a few pre-existing relationships to leverage, and most importantly, can speak authentically about the experiences of the constituency you're trying to organize. In Philly Socialists, we've adjusted this strategy for the specific needs of socialist organizing by developing what some of us have called a base-building dual strategy, best captured by our slogan, serve the people, fight the power. When we say serve the people, we are referencing our campaigns which lie roughly outside the terrain of the state. These include our service projects, as well as campaigns against slumlords and other members of the capitalist class. When we say fight the power, we are referencing our campaigns which lie in direct relation or directly within the state. These include reform campaigns and elections. Of course, sometimes the lines are blurred. Many campaigns require activity within and without the state. When we launched our community garden, it was designed as a serve the people project, an opportunity for us to turn a vacant lot into something that could actually serve the community. However, as gentrification has expanded into our neighborhood, we are building a fight the power campaign to defend our garden from developers by pressuring city government. To understand our dual strategy, I want to talk about the recent example of the Philadelphia Tenants Union. I'll be calling it PTU for short, which on December 6, 2018, won its main reform campaign, Good Cause Eviction Protections, which is also called Just Cause in other cities. And I'll talk a little bit about what eviction protections mean, but before I move on, I want to talk a little bit about our relationship to the PTU, because I think it's important to clarify. The PTU's relationship to Philly Socialists has always been close. Our members provide the founding base of organizers, and we provide the PTU with about $150 per month. However, the PTU's membership ranges from socialists to Democrats, and it maintains a separate leadership board. While Philly Socialist members argue strongly within the PTU to follow a base-building dual strategy, we have worked hard to build the PTU into its own independent democratic organization. Returning back to Good Cause legislation, this legislation is a first step to protect tenants from arbitrary evictions, also called evictions without just or good cause. When it first presented this idea to progressive politicians and the established tenants' rights nonprofits in Philly, the PTU was rebuffed. They said the PTU strategy was too militant, threatened the relationship between the Democratic Party and the nonprofit sector, and was generally politically impossible. Without much support, the legislative route faltered, but the PTU continued to serve the people, tackling building fights and providing court support for tenants. At the same time, it did continue to fight the power, albeit at a lower level, bird-dogging City Hall politicians at town hall events, and continuing to door knock and collect signatures in support of a good cause bill. During this period, the PTU encountered its largest fight at Penguin House, a large apartment complex in Philly. By the time the PTU had arrived, many of the housing units had been vacated. However, more than 60 tenants remained. Many of those who remained were on fixed income, disabled, veterans, and retirees, and could not afford to move so quickly. Others needed to wait for Section 8 vouchers to come through. The PTU launched a series of escalating direct actions, began media outreach, and met with local politicians. And while the PTU could not stop the evictions, it won several months of delay and personally helped dozens of tenants move to new homes. This fight proved crucial for the PTU's reform efforts. This victory brought greater media attention to Good Cause, leading a local machine Democrat on City Council, not a progressive, to draft and sponsor Good Cause legislation. As the legislative struggle unfolded, the PTU was the leading force in pushing the bill forward. The PTU took the lead, organizing lobbying days, filling City Hall, outlining a strategy to target specific members of City Council, and all the while continued building fights. The PTU did not do this alone. It brought into coalition the same panoply of forces that just a few years ago had spurned them. In contrast, however, to the typical position of the left, the PTU did not act as a minority voice in this coalition, but as the dominant force in a broad coalition of progressives, centrist Democrats, and tenants' rights organizations. On December 6, 2018, the PTU passed Good Cause Eviction Protections, While this victory failed to cover all tenants, this bill extended coverage to tenants on month-to-month leases, roughly 1 in 14 tenants in Philly, more than 20,000 tenants. These are the tenants with the greatest likelihood of facing extreme poverty and sudden eviction. With this modicum of protection, Philly's most vulnerable tenants now have a more solid legal footing to take action and organize. More than just reform, this victory has been the most comprehensive test of the base building dual strategy that Philly Socialists has been advocating for. By focusing on Serve the People campaigns while its Fight the Power campaign was simmering, the PTU rinsed and repeated a basic strategy. One, build deep trust-based relationships with tenants and organic leaders. Two, bring them to act based on their faith in the organization and the strategy. And three, deliver on that faith with real material gains. This allowed it to build a base among working class tenants who were prepared to act beyond the ballot box to make gains. This allowed it to avoid endorsing political candidates or tailing progressive nonprofits as the campaign continued. On this latter point, I want to make a heavy emphasis. If our goal is to build a politically independent working class base, then tailing nonprofits is not a viable strategy, even in the short term. Of course, we have joined campaigns where our influence is negligible. For example, larger immigrants' rights organizations might organize a protest or some sort of action without our involvement. When we are asked, we publicize their events and turn out our membership. However, we are clear-eyed. By showing up, we demonstrate that socialists are good people who care about immigrants' rights. But it is these larger immigrants' rights organizations which deliver these actions and which hopefully deliver immigration reform, not the socialists. And that matters. For socialist base builders, strength beyond the ballot box is our focus. It should be clear that in our base building dual strategy, elections play a relatively small practical role. In the context of reform struggles, electing progressive or socialist candidates to accumulate state power can help. However, before we intervene in the electoral field, we believe that any organization should ask one question, whether or not they can hold their elected officials accountable. Even if we are a minority partner, we should be sufficiently powerful that we can influence elected officials. Absent this criteria, a familiar conversation regarding who actually delivered emerges. If we are not at the table holding politicians accountable, who actually delivered this electoral victory? Socialists or the Democratic Party? Despite our recent growth in Philly Socialists, we do not believe that we have the commensurate social power to hold accountable any elected officials we might help elect. Given this assessment, for a little over a year, we have had a moratorium on official endorsements or campaigning for candidates in elected office. In doing so, much like the PTU, we were still able to carry out reform campaigns. In the summer of 2018, Philly Socialists helped organize a left response to ICE detentions by launching an occupation of our local ICE office. As part of this occupation, we called for City Hall to stop sharing with ICE the Philadelphia Police Department's Preliminary Arraignment Reporting System Database, PARS for short. Coordinating with progressive nonprofits and the broader socialist left in Philadelphia, we won this demand after weeks of constant protest. But we should be aware that our aim is not only to alter the actions of the state, in other words, demanding reforms, but also to alter the composition of the state, how it is structured. Some may argue that there is no reason the left could not vote into office every change we desire. We could imagine that supermajorities of socialists, after years of successful electioneering, would pass law by law socialism into existence. Laws abolishing the police and establishing democratically controlled community defense boards, the complete reorganization of the US federalized governance system, and the introduction of workers' councils, Medicare for all, nationalization of housing, and the withdrawal of US troops from abroad, just to name a few. But we know that the US governance system will never allow such a reorganization of the American state through a bourgeois democratic process alone. The important role of power beyond the ballot box is captured by Jane McAlevey's retelling of the Gore v. Bush debacle in 2000. Having warned labor leaders that the GOP was strategizing beyond the ballot box, mobilizing its activist base into direct action, Jane McAlevey pleaded with her superiors to provide her with the resources and authority to organize mass labor rallies across Florida. However, the Gore campaign stood firm, relying on the bourgeois democratic process to win. When the Supreme Court voted 5-4 to stop the recount in Florida, McAlevey recounts, "The Gore people were flipping out because guess what? They hadn't planned it this way. They'd imagined they were involved in a civilized legal proceeding. They were going to win the case methodically by recounting the votes. The law was going to keep the matter local and away from the Supreme Court where things didn't look so good. But oh wait, the Republicans have this whole direct action thing working in perfect sync with their legal action. Despite having the strength of the entire labor movement behind them, the Democratic Party failed to leverage its strength outside ballot box. Protests, strikes, mass civil disobedience were all eschewed for a commitment to the naive belief that the state's logic was centered at the ballot box. Sanders' presidential bids in 2016 and 2020 loom large in the background of this conversation. So do the recent elections of Democratic Socialists. However, these recent developments exist in the context of Black Lives Matter protests, Days Without an Immigrant strikes, the Women's March, teacher strikes, and so much more. The greatest opportunity available to the left is not that socialism has ceased to be a dirty word, but the class has gone into greater motion than in recent memory. The gulf between what working class people need and what they receive has always been wide. That's obvious. What has changed is that working class people are now demanding in greater and greater numbers that the gulf be bridged through forceful, immediate, political, and social action. There is a serious debate to be had. How many demands can be met by a strategy focused on the ballot box? What reforms can we actually deliver? What compositional changes to the state can we enact? Here's what Philly Socialist believes. We will never change the composition of the American state through the ballot box alone, for the simple reason that bourgeois rule extends beyond the ballot box. But as the gulf between working people, what working people need and receive widens, and the clamor for action loudens, socialists can strike beyond the ballot box, deliver, and rebuild a politically independent working class base. This is the strategic perspective of the Philly Socialists, and I believe the contours of an official Marxist center one. Thank you.
Hi, comrades. It's really wonderful to be in a room with so many of you talking about this strategy, but I'm deeply regretting going after Andrew. that great speech. But I guess what I want to do is contextualize some of his comments and his description of his sort of up close description of the work of our comrades in Philly, the Philly Socialists, with a kind of pointing out some disagreements actually that I have with things that Andrew has said, and hopefully using that to explain how we think about differences of political agreement within the Marxist Center right now, but also to expand on a few points that you know can't ever fit into a single 15-minute conversation. So I'm hoping to add on a little bit here rather than really improve upon I think something that would be difficult to improve on. What I want to say, well, first I'm going to read you guys a quote. This is the right crowd for it. You're going to like it. Rosa. Okay. She's right here looking at you. Okay. We know that the present state society is not society representing the rising working class. It is itself a representative of capitalist society. It's a class state. Therefore, its reform measures are not an application of social control, that is, the control of society working freely in its own labor process. They are forms of control applied by the class organization of capital to the production of capital. The so-called social reforms are enacted in the interests of capital. Yes, Bernstein and Conrad Schmidt see at present only feeble beginnings of this control. They hope to see a long succession of reforms in the future, all favoring the working class. But here they committed mistakes similar to the belief in the unlimited development of the trade union movement. Okay, and I think this, I read this quote at an earlier speech in a discussion and debate with some of our comrades in the DSA. And I did because I think this is really kind of the central, this is a central sort of line of division in the left right now, and one that we have to take really pretty seriously. Even though in a certain sense, right, it's strange and exciting for some of us for whom Jane McAlevey was a kind of professional technical writer, right? If you were a union organizer a few years ago, who would have ever heard of Jane McAlevey, let alone the rank and file strategy? I can tell you as a former Solidarity member, that used to be about 16 of us sitting around in the room talking about the rank and file strategy and, you know, doing union work based on that. And now the whole of the socialist left is kind of thinking about these ideas broadly in a way I would have been difficult for me to anticipate. But that's where my background comes from. So I want to point out that when we're just talking about this, it can be sometimes difficult to differentiate the difference between a kind of Bernsteinian progressive reform to the eventual evolution of socialism versus the kind of building independent working class power and winning reforms through direct action, right, that reinforces the organization that's providing that power, right, and the confidence of the class and the composition of the class as a class, you know, as we like to say, for itself, right? And that there's a difference between those two strategies fundamentally in that way, even if we are talking about, we're using the same words and even sometimes the same thinkers, right, to talk about class struggle, to talk about working class politics. And so to clarify that, I think for me and why I'm a member of the Marxist Center, why I'm very excited about the future of the Marxist Center, I want to take it to this question of the labor process. That's something that's very interesting to me, both politically and intellectually, and I think quite fundamental to the difference that we're trying to outline here. And when I say difference, I also don't think it's, I think it's also important to say about the Marxist Center that we are not trying to set ourselves up as a kind of sectarian corner outpost, the most pure revolutionaries on the left at all. Our goal is to overlap, right, with people that we disagree with on the left, or who fundamentally agree with us about the necessity of building working class power in tenants organizing in the labor movement, right, and in the broader social movements and community, regardless of what your particular position on various questions of often great import, right, but maybe not great import for that purpose of building working long-haul working class institutions. But at the same time, I think it's important for us to develop some clarity around these things in practice, right, as we're doing this organizing. So thinking about workplace organizing as base building, I think it really does highlight two kinds of potentials for building the base. Just because you have a base doesn't mean it's a base for socialist politics. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a base for working class politics. It doesn't necessarily mean it's a base, let alone for revolutionary socialist working class politics, right? The Democratic Party has a base. They have a really big base. Right, and they have a base that's mediated through, as you sort of mentioned, right, the labor bureaucracy, NGOs, and other kinds of mediating layers, right, between the working class, managerial layers, really, between the working class and the capital class that owns both of the parties in this country. And so what I see is connecting the base building idea and fully socialist between these different venues, right, is thinking about really doing that organizing from below, right? You're not going to go out and organize tenants through an NGO that has members that happen to be tenants, right, or through the manager that brings people into the building, right? And you're not going to go out and organize workers starting with the top layers of bureaucratic unions. You're going to go in and organize workers at the level of the shop floor, right? And that can be, that can look like a bunch of different things. It can look like building a new union in a place where there isn't a union, right? It can look like building a minority union or a workers network in a place where there's no union, right? In the same shop or in different shops in the same employer, right? It can look like building a caucus in a union, right, where to either fight for democratic structures in that union to be able to take full control of the union, right, or in unions where there are more democratic structures, right? So it could look like that. I think what is a question that's come up, I think, for a lot of us and for me in the past is, if you're doing all this great work, right, building your base, building the rank and file in the workplace, building your tenants' power in your building, in your neighborhood, in your city, what do you need a socialist organization for? What do you need a revolutionary organization for, right? And that's why I think the answer to that question is one that we can't just, it's easier said than done, right? It's easier answered. With words than with deeds. But what's exciting for me about the Marxist Center is I think both the intent and the possibility exists, right, to bring together in solidarity, organizing in different sectors that are often divided, right, by the structure of capitalism, right, as well as by all the ways that those divisions are lived, right, across all the different divisions we could name in a long list, right? But that means we want to connect our tenant power to our worker power, right? Even to, we even have some co-ops, people working in the co-op movement in the Marxist Center. And we want to connect those to each other at the level of the rank and file, at the level of the base, and not through, for example, bureaucratic alliances between local unions or between NGOs and unions, right? And, you know, for a long time, that was the only solidarity that really felt possible, something like the Job for Justice. You know, I'm a 90s baby, right? And so that was what we spent a lot of time doing. But I do think this moment in socialism, in the socialist possibility, we have a chance actually to connect more broadly, directly at this level of the base. And I think this, a socialist organization and a network, you know, Marxist Center is not a democratic centralist group. We can't tell each other what to do at all. If we could, I might be doing something different right now. But what we are hoping to do, right, is to develop a future vision collectively, right, through the organizing process and also through the process of organizing ourselves as socialists and revolutionaries, right, together, and hopefully come to a higher degree of unity in the future coming out of that work. That's how I would describe it and what I think is very exciting. And to me, that possibility is what makes the difference between building a base that's just going to ultimately be captured by the Democratic Party, right, or be captured by that bureaucratic layer, and our movements, as we like to say, heading off into that graveyard, and one that is going to fight to maintain its independence going forward, right, fight to build power for itself going forward. And so that's what appealed to me about the Marxist Center. That's what I do see developing in the kind of, I think, it's, what are we up to now? 19 different affiliates, or is it more than that? Okay, it's at least 19. It might be a little bit more than that. And it's what I'm seeing happen in those, in the projects. Most of the projects in the Marxist Center are not as developed as what's happening in Philly Socialists. I don't think they're all going to develop exactly along the same lines as Philly Socialists, but I do think we're going to build some inspiration and strength, right, out of being connected to each other in various places. Other sort of factoids that people here might not know about Marxist Center that are of interest. It's not just that we want to bring in new working class people into politics, but I also think we want to bring newly radicalized people into socialist organization, right? And there are many of those people. And that's what excites me about the Marxist Center as well. It's not a collection of people who kind of come out of various other sects and are regrouping. This is a groupment, not a regroupment, right? Most of the people are in their first ever socialist organization. I'm one of the oldest people that I know in the Marxist Center, which is very weird to me because I went for so long being the youth wing, well into my 30s, into suddenly I'm a grandmother. People are asking me what I think about stuff. Very odd. And it's also quite geographically diverse. We have collectives in places I've never met socialist groups in, like Wyoming, and several places in the South, and across the West and the South, which somebody who grew up in the South and moved to the East Coast is sort of, we can really do socialism like in the whole geographic part of this country. That's an exciting prospect, right? So we want to bring in new socialists, not just the same old socialists mixing and matching along various lines of fight that seem important at the time. And so I think I will, how am I doing? Okay, I think I went over, sorry. I think I will leave it at that and leave it to some questions and answers for you guys. And hopefully you can ask us some good questions so we can answer things that we haven't yet talked about.